Well, hello, everybody. Ed here. Let's see, who do we have so far? Anna, welcome. Liz, welcome. Good to have you ladies here. What is going on? All right, Anna. Hey, just for fun, while I get things set up, what is the weather like where you are today? You getting some nice spring weather, or is it just like back to winter? I know over here in Atlanta, we've had it's been beautiful over the past week, but it's been lows in the 30s, which is crazy. Sunny and 40 in Nashville. Looking for the weekend. Looking good for the weekend. Yeah. Hey, how about that? Anna, you're probably getting the same weather we were getting this weekend. Was it just absolutely gorgeous in Nashville? It was just glorious here in Atlanta. 70s next weekend. Wow, that's awesome. Good stuff. I'm not going to be here. I'm taking the kids to Southern California for spring break. My wife has to work, so it's just going to be boys trying to see what kind of trouble we can get into. But over there, it's going to be gorgeous too. I think low 70s and sunny. Cool. So I'm in a busy cafe. We'll be listening and chatting here in chat. Who's that? Who just chimed in? It's registering you is kind of with a weird name. Whoever that is, welcome. Hey, Joe, welcome. Good to see you here, and welcome to the program. It's great to have you on board. Steve, great to have you back, my friend. Oh, that's Linda. Linda, your name is showing up as like some cryptic password. 3/KIE4+. Yeah. You know what you could do? If you mouse over your name, and then you should be able to right click, or when you mouse over, there should be a rename button, or there probably will be. Try that, and then you can change the name. But it doesn't matter. I'll just know that that's you if that doesn't work. Good stuff. Let's see who else is here. Yeah. Steve. And Steve, you're also in. Steve, are you in Tennessee as well? Just like Anna? I couldn't remember if you're in Tennessee or in Kentucky. Louisville, Kentucky. Okay. I knew it was bourbon country, you know, so that's how my mind works. And Joe, I think you're dialing in from Maryland, right? Yes, bourbon country, faux show. Maryland, okay, awesome. Great to have you here. All right. All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and get started. I know there are going to be a few more folks who are going to be joining us, but as always, I like to start on a positive note. It's good to take stock of where you are right now and the good things that have happened over the past few weeks. So would love to know about something good that's happened in your world. If you would do me a favor and go to the chat area, type in a capital W, and just share a win that you've experienced over the past week or two. Now, look, a win could be anything, big or small. The whole idea is, you know, this is something that you feel good about, and this is something that maybe making you feel like you're making progress, like you got a big breakthrough, you had an aha moment. It doesn't need to be necessarily landing a client or anything along those lines. Just something that makes you feel good about where you are right now and the progress you're making. However you see that. So just type in a capital W in front of it, so I know that's what you're referring to. And let's see, we got a few in here that have come in. Where am I? Some reason I just lost. Here we go. Here we're back. Let's try this again. Steve says, I mine lots of new business from an old client. Excellent. Good stuff. Liz had a prospect return after dropping off in November, got the first assignment from them. Oh, good to hear. That's good. Nothing like an unexpected win like that, right? From an old client or from a prospect that you thought was dead. Linda says, have a few big prospects on the line, one proposal, one great phone call that would lead to a meeting, and a phone call that would lead to another phone meeting. Wow. Sounds like things are about to get absolutely crazy in a good way in your world. That's great, Linda. And welcome, by the way. It's great to have you on board. Anna, best month of business to date. It's looking like $20,000 month. Oh, my gosh. My mind cannot even grasp that amount of money. That's awesome, Anna. So, so happy for you. Man, that's grown since the last time we corresponded. I know you were looking really, really good. That's fantastic. And you know what's so great about that? To me, it's more than just about the money. To me, is when you start reaching new levels, that becomes the new normal. And it becomes your expectation. And then you start acting in accordance to those numbers and that level of performance. It's quite magical. So to me, that's why I'm really happy. It's not just the money. It's all that other stuff. Yeah, you got some great congratulations here from the team. Joe says, I win. A magazine I reached out to a year ago got back to me recently, assigned me a test article, and liked it. Looks like I'll be getting ongoing work from them. Hey, that's awesome, Joe. And I know you do really well with ongoing clients, so that's good to hear that you got another one here in the works. Linda says, one of my prospects has a six-figure content budget. Yeah, those are great, huh? Ruthie in talks for a retainer. Good stuff. Yeah, I was curious how if you'd heard anything back from those folks. That's good that's still a possibility. Yeah, good stuff. Let's see who else? I think that was everybody. Everybody who is on. No, we got a few more who've joined. Let's see. Erica, hey, welcome. Hannah, good to see you here. Kelly, hello. And, of course, I know Ruthie. Ruthie, good to see you. Okay, so let's talk about where you are right now. What are you working on in the program? So, specifically, what project are you working on in your game plan? And you might recall that, you know, I group everything into projects when I assign you a game plan, and I'm just curious to know, it would be always nice to see what your focus is on right now. So just let me know by typing a capital P in the chat area and let me know what your focus is currently. Is it prospecting? Is working on some heavy client stuff? Maybe it's outside of the project stuff. Maybe it's, productivity. Maybe it's sales conversations. Just let me know what your main focuses this week in terms of our work together. Joe is working on positioning. Good stuff. Yeah. Linda is working on my content cookie PDF postcard. So prospecting plus your course lessons plus three deadlines this week. Okay. So you got a full week for sure. Hannah, still chugging along with implementing my marketing plan prospecting. Erica is reluctant. Web positioning. I want to jump ahead to newsletters, but need to establish my website first. I think that's smart, right? Because that's your hub. Your website is your hub. So you want to make sure it's kind of like, before you drive traffic to your house, you got to make sure that your house is decorated, and set up the way you want. Let's see. Liz, clarity around my HR marketer audience versus the HR buyers they sell to. Yeah. Okay. Anna, for the coaching, I really need to brainstorm a few ideas for my website header. I hope to get some done for feedback from the group this week. Yeah, let us know. Best place, post it in the Facebook group, and we'll all chime in for sure. Ruthie, working on the marketing plan training. Erica, I got that one. Kelly has been pretty busy with client work, so I'm focusing on warm meal prospecting and LinkedIn for now. That's great. And by the way, Kelly, a couple of thoughts. One is, I find that prospecting tends to be much more effective when you are busy. Okay. So good for you for keeping up with that. Even, you don't have to crank it up like crazy if you got a ton of client work, but keep up the consistency. The other thing to keep in mind is sometimes when you're booked solid with client work, it's sometimes a good idea to shift your prospecting time and energy to nurturing not yet ready prospects, because it's a more natural thing to do. So for example, if you do get a prospect, if you're doing standard prospecting and then you get somebody who says, I'm interested, and you engage in a conversation and then they want to hire you, but you're absolutely booked solid, it's kind of awkward to say, oh yeah, that's great, but I don't have time, or I'm booked for the next 4 or 5 weeks. But if you're doing, if you're nurturing not yet ready prospects, it's very easy to say, hey, this is great. I wasn't reaching out because of that, but I'd love to talk with you about it. However, I should let you know about my backlog. And it's a much more natural conversation. In fact, it's usually leads down a positive path. Okay, so Steve is prospecting while finishing my marketing plan, which is like making war munitions in the trenches while under fire, but it's working. Love the analogy. All right, good stuff. Guys, I love that you're taking action consistently. You guys understand that this game is all about momentum. So love to see the momentum you're creating in your businesses. Let's get to questions and conversations. Look, as a reminder, we can talk about anything you'd like, okay? So if you have a question or you'd like to discuss something, just type in Q, capital Q in the chat area, and just give me an idea of what you'd like to talk about. I'll unmute you so we can discuss it in detail. All I ask is that, you know, when we talk, keep your question focused and specific. The more specific it is, the better I can help you. Also, one question per person. Don't worry, I can come back to you. So if you have, if you have something that requires some conversation, that back and forth, that's great. That's why we're here. And if you got more than one, let's just, you know, come back to you for the second round. We usually do 2-3 rounds of questions. And of course, if applicable, tell me what one or two options you're considering. If you happen to be somewhere like Linda, for example, at a cafe or work or a client's office, somewhere where you can't really talk, also let me know so I won't unmute you, but otherwise I'll just automatically unmute you so we can have a conversation. We had a few pre-submitted questions. I'm going to address those first. And then we'll get to the chat. But in the meantime, you can go ahead and post any questions that you have. Just give me the gist of what you want to talk about there in the chat area. All right, Liz. One of my focus areas for the 90-day plan is to get super clear about my audience. As you know, I had the aha that I've been more focused on my audience's audience and need to regroup around the needs of my audience. So far, I started a brainstorm mind map to consider their pain points. Any other thoughts on a good way to start looking at this group from a new and better angle? Yeah. So let's talk about this, Liz. All right, you should be unmuted. Hello.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey.
How are you?
Good.
Good stuff. So I remember this is one of the first things we discussed, that you had recognized this as a is something you needed to start working on. So great to hear that this is your focus right now.
Yeah, here I am.
There you go.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about, and I'm going to draw this out just because I think it's going to be, at least for me, helpful. Let's talk about the different layers, right? So if this is you, you're right now, you are writing directly for mostly who?
I get so tied up in this. So, I write for HR marketers, mm-hmm. but I write all kinds of content related to HR. But what I'm realizing is, like, on my website, I share, you know, the content that I've written, and that's all, about employee engagement or benefits or payroll. And that's not really speaking to the companies that are selling that stuff, mm-hmm. to HR.
So maybe the right now, it sounds like your work, so your main clients tend to be companies that are selling to HR departments, right?
Right.
Okay, so selling to HR departments. And then they're writing to HR departments.
Right.
And then sometimes, you know, then those people have to write to employees. I mean, if I don't know, this will be helpful, but just so we have kind of the full supply chain.
Yeah, or even to other, like to finance, I would add that in there. Because those HR departments have to convince finance that they want to make this investment.
Yeah. Okay, so right now the supply chain looks something like this. You create something to the companies that are selling HR departments. It could be a tech company that sells software. It could be someone who's a company that creates these programs, whatever. And then they're selling to another group, which is HR departments of different companies. And then they're writing to, you know, employees or finance departments. And sometimes they're using that same information, or sometimes they're, you know, doing their own stuff.
Right.
Is that kind of the, what it typically looks like?
Yeah.
But then you're telling me that the way you're positioning yourself on your website is.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I've started to make a bit of a shift. Like in my newsletter, I'm more talking about, hey, what's it like to market to these people? And, you know, what about your content? But I'm trying to figure out, like, I still don't really feel as clear on those companies selling to HR departments.
Okay. And you started doing, I think you said you're reaching out to people and you're doing a little bit of informational interviews, whether through email or phone.
No, I haven't done that yet. You mean like, hey, what's your pain point?
Yeah. It just, you know, having a conversation or look, I'm trying to better speak to you.
Okay.
Because I've been speaking to this audience.
Right.
And this is, you would go where you have relationships, right? But I want to really start talking to you.
Right.
I think that information, that kind of field level intelligence is going to be invaluable for you.
Okay. I was thinking of even like doing a survey.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would think that, especially with HR, I bet you're going to get better response rates on your survey here than you normally would with any other category, right? Because HR is very much into that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to generalize, but. So you could do that. The survey's going to give you a way to, I mean, if you can send it out to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Then it's going to give you some great. Okay, so here's one idea. If you did the survey, do the survey first, and then go more granular by talking to a few people.
Okay. Well, yeah, I could even say in there, hey, leave me your name if you'd be willing to have a quick call or something, right?
Yeah. And that's what I do, you know. I don't know if you remember this, but, you know, there have been several programs that I've created in my business that I start with a survey. I'm trying to understand what the pain points are of a certain segment of my audience.
Yeah.
And then based on that, I'll select a few people based on how they responded, and I'll have a conversation with them. It's not a sales call.
Right.
It's just I want to dig deeper into some of the things you mentioned.
Right.
And that's super, super helpful.
Okay.
And that's usually where some of the biggest breakthroughs and insights come.
Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, I've been like trying to do this in my own little silo, and that this helps. Yeah, I just got to get out there and talk to people.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you're going to really want to hit on in the survey is, so it's not just pain points, but you want to kind of dig deep into, okay, which ones which ones are somehow related to me and what I do? And I think in many cases you're going to be able to draw, like, okay, well, we're being forced to do more with less. Right. Well, I don't know. It doesn't really impact me. Well, yeah, it's okay. So how can you offer smarter ways of using the resources they do have in terms of content marketing?
Right.
You know, just repurposing, for instance. So that's where you have to, with a survey, just kind of read between the lines. And then when you talk to people, this is when you can dig a little bit deeper and have some back and forth.
Right. Okay. Be on the lookout for that survey coming to you via LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
Does this help, though? I mean, because I think the survey and then talking with a few people will definitely be it. Give you a lot of what you need. The aha is somewhere in there, but in terms of at least thinking about what you're going to need to focus on with your messaging, shifting this, does this, what I'm sensing is you're still hesitant or confused.
No, this is exactly what I need to do. Go ahead.
Well, when you think about it, Liz, that this is what's going to matter to them is that it's going to be closely aligned to what the pain points that this audience has. Right? So if HR departments are having to deal with just say new regulations, then that's something they're going to need to be talking about, these guys.
Right.
In addressing, this is how we help you.
Right.
So in a way, this kind of flows upstream, because ultimately this is the, this is the kind of the core.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I don't think it's been awful that I've shown that, hey, I totally get the HR department and I can talk to them, because that obviously has worked for 6 years, that, I've had enough clients that have said, oh yeah, that's who we need. I just think that I can get a little bit more specific to help them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Do you feel you have some direction here? Good direction?
Yeah.
Cool. When you talk with these guys, I think part of what you're going to want to ask them about is, how can I help support you through, information, value added services.
Right.
And I think if you let them know ahead of time, look, I don't have something to sell you. I'm just really trying to figure out.
Right. So that would you save that for the people that I have the actual conversations with, or would you ask?
Yeah, I would. Just because that's something that a lot of people won't talk about or won't admit to in a survey, but if you're having a conversation, I mean, you could have it in the survey, but typically those questions are that I just ask them in a conversation.
Yeah. Cool.
Survey, it tends to be something like really easy,
yeah.
Quick and easy. I as many multiple choice or yes and no questions as possible, and then but have a few open ended questions where they just get to
go wild.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited.
I guess what I'm saying, Liz, is the good thing is at least you're writing already about this, right? You're writing about this area. So I think reverse engineering it is going to be easier than you think, because you already know the drivers that are driving not just your business, but your clients' businesses.
Right.
Okay. So if you have that, you already know this direction. Now it's okay. How can I help support you? And then, you know, what kind of message would resonate with you coming from somebody like me?
Great.
You know, I did something similar where I worked for, so this is me, and then software companies that sell to food and beverage industry as an example. And then they're selling to food and beverage manufacturers who are selling to consumers.
Right.
Or distributors, et cetera, but ultimately it's the consumer. So, I mean, I could have taken this stance. I didn't. But what I did was one way that I would write content or copy is talk about I understand this really well, which means that I understand – you know, what you're dealing with and trying to market and sell your systems.
Right. And that's kind of how I have positioned myself.
Yeah.
I just, and maybe okay. Somebody was looking at my website and they're like, well, who are you actually talking to? The HR departments or the people selling? So then that just got me thinking.
Maybe it's then a slight switch. Maybe it's just talking about, like I just said, it's really the order in which you present it. I write for you. And what makes me different is the fact that I really understand this.
Yeah.
And the drivers here. So I understand what you're dealing with and what you're trying to communicate and how.
Yeah.
Okay. And I can help you. Write copy and content that's really going to communicate effectively and persuasively to this with this audience.
Yeah.
But here again, they're dealing with, you know, all this goes upstream. You know, there's all these pressures on the consumer side and regulatory pressure too.
Right.
But and that's going upstream to them, and of course, you know, that's where it impacts me.
Right.
So maybe it's just really that. Because I think the other part we haven't talked about is, you know, in your efforts, your prospecting efforts, it's going straight to, because I think you would express that as a concern too, that you end up working with a lot of departments that are not marketing communications.
Well, or just, teams are, they don't have that department. It's more kind of, it's just somebody's one-off project.
Ah, okay. I don't think it can hurt. Do the survey, talk with a few respondents, and, you know, the good thing, and this is not an urgent thing, but I would start it now because this could, you know, this could be a 4 to 6 week project. But don't stop everything else on your game plan because of this. Keep doing what you're doing. And then this will give you the insights you need to just refine things and take them up a notch.
Yeah. Yeah, this actually helps me feel like, okay, it's not like I'm blowing things up. It's just refining. So that's good.
There you go. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Hannah pre-submitted something here. Can we talk through a potential retainer that is up in the air for me? I could use your insight weighing pros and cons and some of the tricky bits of the situation. Absolutely. Let me find you here. Hey, Hannah, how are you?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to hear from you. Thanks for talking through this with me. So the main thing is I need to send a response today.
Okay.
And so this is a prospect. This is kind of my most promising prospect that has reached back out after my positioning for the healthcare tech people. mm-hmm. and health IT. So she reached back out about a month ago, and you know, even in her email, she was like, she was like, as a marketer, I rarely like never respond to these things, but you seem to be with your skill set, someone that could really be someone that we could use. It's almost like a unicorn finding someone who understands B2B and healthcare and tech and all this stuff. So
that's great to hear. Yeah.
Right. So, we've been kind of going back and forth over the past month. She'll ask for a quote on specific things, and I've sent, you know, her some ranges. And then, you know, she wanted to get started on a quarterly retainer in April for the, mm-hmm. you know, for Q2. And she said they have a writer now. It's an hourly arrangement. She's not thrilled with her because there's a lot of hand-holding. So mm-hmm. that's where she's kind of hoping I can come in and maybe hit the ground running a little bit more. And so she kind of wanted to get going pretty quick. You know, it was like, could you send me a quote for, and she gave me a big list. And I did go through and do the sort of retainer, adding everything up, and then figuring out how much it would be. And it's a lot of work, which is awesome. But it was like, even when I sort of went through and did it, and then I was like, wow, that's a big number. It was like $8,000 for the quarter. And so then I was like, this is probably bad, but I went back through and brought things down a little bit because I was just like, I've never quoted that much before, and that just seems really high to me. So,
a separate conversation.
Right.
At some point.
I know, right. I will get to a point where that's no problem. I can just send that off. But, you know, considering, I don't know, everything, I was just like, I don't know. I don't want to blow this. So I adjusted it down just a little bit. So I ended up sending her something that was like $7,300 for the quarter. And because a lot of it's like proofreading and stuff I can actually outsource, and that's not a huge deal. But mm-hmm. then there's also, she did say that there was a potential for sort of ad hoc projects popping up because they always do. So that's kind of like, okay, so that's, you know, so I only gave a 10% retainer discount instead of like 20. That was kind of what I did there.
Okay.
But I sent it to her, and she said, she was very nice, respectful, not like trying to like finagle or anything. She was just like, well, this is more than double what we're paying now, so I guess we can't move forward, you know. But, you know, I've got your contact info, and maybe we'll be in touch later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I was just like curious if we could meet in the middle. And I think I asked if like 6,000 would work. And then she was like, even that's stretching it for us for right now, but would love to talk to you more down the line, that kind of thing. Maybe the timing's just not right. So I just was like, all right, time to let it go. But over the weekend, it just didn't sit well with me because of the strategic opportunity I have here with all these different, you know, it's like new types of projects, and it's in this market that I really want to get into, and I think I'm equipped for, but I don't have any, you know, solid samples in this very specific sort of cross section of it yet. So I kind of, and my time horizon is closing in, as you know, with the pregnancy, you know, having a baby in August. So it was kind of like, if I could get these under my belt before I go away, then I can come back with like a solid set of samples. And so maybe it's worth it to try to negotiate even more, which is not something I would normally do. Like, I would usually just let it go. And I mean, like, literally there have been a couple of other opportunities that didn't work out in the past month, and I didn't give it a second thought, but this is kind of a strategic thing, so it's different. So, so basically my question is, how do I kind of close? Oh, so I sent her one more email yesterday asking basically, what's your number, kind of, you know, like, mm-hmm. would you mind sending over something that you'd be comfortable with? I'll see if maybe I can make it work on my end, because I'd really love to work with you guys. And if there's any way possible, just curious, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. a last thought. So she sent me that the highest they can do right now is $3,000 a month. And, you know, they'll have more opportunities, I think she said, at the end of the year to work with more partners and have bigger budgets, hopefully. But for right now, this is all they can do. And she doesn't know if that's feasible with what I sent her. So,
$3,000 a month,
which still isn't shabby. You know, I mean, with what I'm making now, like, that'll take me up to like 8,000, which is great. You know, that would be great to have for the next 3 months. So,
and you had quoted, just to be clear, 7,300. Yeah. I thought that was a quarter, but that's a month.
Oh, I'm sorry. A month. Yeah. Monthly.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. 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 Cause it was a lot. It was like, it's like six email campaigns, like,
yeah, we don't have to get into the details, but
yeah.
So they came back to you, 3,000 a month is the highest we could do. Did they say anything else? Did they say anything like, you know, did they indicate, well, yeah, but we've moved on, or does that
no? Yeah, well, here's what she said. We currently pay 3,000 a month, and I don't have the flexibility to go any higher than that right now. With that, I'm not sure what's feasible. As I mentioned, I'm hopeful budget will open up in the second half of the year so we can engage more partners, but we just aren't there yet.
Okay.
So it sounds like they haven't moved on. It sounds like maybe if I respond to her today, if there's potential that I can get in there before they sign on their existing writer. But two things are, how do I close that kind of $4,000 gap without it seeming sort of absurd? And then, so let's start with that. There's one question for you.
Yeah. Okay. So, first of all, I know that this is already done, okay, but just this is a learning opportunity. So yeah. I can't ignore this because this is absolutely key. I strongly advise against talking about a retainer and quoting a retainer when it's a new client.
Yeah. Okay?
Just because think about it this way. They asked you to quote, so this is like the amount of work. And you came in with this, right? So, or to make it more dramatic, you know, so, you know, if we look at a scale, when, you know, one part of the scale is here and then the other one's here, I mean, this is just so much higher. Right now, everything's on paper. The value that you're offering and that she's seen is all on paper. This is how she perceives you, but she doesn't know. Okay.
Right.
So you need to create a situation where, in fact, let's do it this way. The work they give you is that, but then the value in terms of the perceived value is more like this. Meaning mm-hmm. it could be the same amount, but you've proven something to them. You've proven that, you know what, this is, she's worth it. This, it's worth hiring her.
Right.
For that or close to it. You haven't been able to do that yet. So the reason it's so much better when it's a client you've already worked for is you've already proven yourselves to them. So even if it's higher than what they thought, they're willing to engage in a conversation about how we can make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's trust there. There's a relationship. It's really, really difficult to do this, especially at these numbers.
Yeah.
Sight unseen. Okay, yeah, we can go for 7,300 or, you know, or even close, like 6,800, 6,900. It's just really, really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So what I always suggest, even when a client or prospect says, you know, would like for you to quote us a retainer, monthly retainer, and here's what we need to get done, is to take that off the table, and which is kind of unusual. That's like, well, wait a minute, what do you mean? And say, I want to make sure that we're going to be a really good fit for each other. I feel strongly that we will, but I want to just make sure 100%. Why don't we start with one or two pilot projects just to get to know each other a bit more and just make sure. Now, of course, you're taking some of the risk there because mm-hmm. if it ends up, you know, if for some reason they don't feel that, you know, you kind of measured up, then the retainer thing is going to be off the table, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Cause that would happen. And that's theoretical situation. That would happen anyway.
Not yeah.
hypothetical situation. Right. So, and that's a much easier yes. Okay.
Totally.
So that's just a, you know, a lesson for everyone here and for the future. I rarely see the situation work out even when they do agree
mm-hmm.
to it. I rarely see it work out anyway, because you have moved from meeting at a bar to moving in and becoming roommates like that day.
Yeah.
That is a lot. You know,
I did.
She looked cute. He looked cute, but my God, he's a mess. He's a slob. He doesn't clean up after himself. And, you know, we got problems.
Yeah. I did actually, with in our initial phone call, she mentioned that she had someone on retainer and she was interested in a retainer. And I did say that I thought it would be best to start with one project and see if it's a good fit. And I, you know, that's sort of the standard procedure. I think so too, because honestly, I am more nervous about taking on $73, you know, $100 of work when it's like, hopefully this works, you know, like, hopefully, you know, I would rather start with one project and see if I even like working with them, you know, before I make a commitment to them. But yeah, she seemed to be, for some reason, I think maybe it's, I don't know, it's a fast paced environment. I don't know what it is, but she was just kind of like, okay, yeah, but we really need a retainer, like, because we need someone to cover everything. So I don't know. Maybe that's even a warning sign. I don't know. But what do you think?
Well, the other thing that worries me is, you know, if they want, if they really want like this much work done.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can only pay this. This is a red flag. I'm not saying they're bad people. It's just that they either haven't thought this through or they're used to paying, you know, low fees, which is going to create a problem.
Right.
You know, so what do you want at the end of the day? I mean, I know what you're saying. You want to land the deal, but ultimately, let's talk longer term. What do you want? You probably want a longer term client. You don't want to, like, you don't want a nightmare.
I do not want a nightmare client. And I do think that the work is probably disproportional to the pay, but it is not abysmal. You know, it is something that would definitely like help me, to make, you know, an extra $3,000 over the next 3 months. Kind of that bird, one bird in the hand is better than two in the bush, right? Like, yes, I could get two more amazing contracts in the next month or I could not. But yeah, long term, I definitely want to earn more than this, but this is where I wonder if like for $3,000 a month, I maybe, this might be a loss leader type thing where I'm working a lot more for a lot less, but I'm getting lots of samples in this niche where once I have those samples, then I can fairly quickly escalate to higher levels of income within that, you know, long term.
Well, so perfect. Okay. So there's no way you can accept $3,000 for the same scope of work that you had to $7,300.
Okay.
So it just psychologically, first of all, you're not going to be able to make the numbers work, but psychologically, it's going to send all kinds of red flags.
Right? It seems weird.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about it. You're going to buy a car. They wanted $20,000. So, oh, man, I all I got is $8,000. All right, we can make that work. Whoa, wait a minute.
What's wrong with this car?
Yeah. So what you could do is the only thing I think is viable is less for less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, agree to $3,000, but with a reduced scope.
Okay.
And then treat it as a, you know, whether you want to call it pilot or, you know, just to really get a sense. Because I would even stress, look, I know you've had a bad experience or whatever you want to call it with your current writer and all this hand-holding. I want to show you what I can do and how I work, and I want to make sure that we're a really good fit. Why don't we do, you know, X amount for this scope? Now, when you do that, you know, you may want to squeeze a little bit, you know, so that way it's shared risk. And then see what it is. If you can prove yourself, you now become a safer option.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that has happened is they've invested a month or two with you, and that makes it less likely they're going to want to go back out there and look for somebody else. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to look at the sunk cost, which is, you know, the investment they've already made of time, energy, and resources, and which is a bad way of making decisions, by the way, but use it to your advantage. You should never make these kinds of decisions based on sunk costs. You should always make it on future. But they're going to look at sunk costs and go, ah, let's just make it work. I mean, unless you were horrible, which I know you're not. Okay.
Yeah.
So I would find a way to make the, you know, if this is what they've got to work with, okay. What if we did this? It's a reduced scope, treat it as a pilot, and then, you know, just go ahead and squeeze as much as you can without getting into dangerous territory.
Okay. I like that idea.
And I think that's a good balance because you're getting the short-term result you want while hopefully paving the way for a longer-term opportunity. But don't squeeze so much out of your numbers that if they then say, you know what, we can make bigger budget now available, that you now say, you know, I was happy for about 2 minutes when she told me that, and now I'm depressed.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think it's kind of a situation where they need what they need. So I don't know if I can get them to reduce the scope overall, but I wonder if I could sort of offer something where, like, for instance, one thing in their list is they need a white paper finished up that was started in Q1 needs to be finished up. Maybe if I offered it, how about if I just take over that white paper project only, and that'll be like a pilot project together.
Yeah. How about this? You know? Take on the higher value projects.
Yeah.
And because let's face it, let's just say, and we don't have to get into these details, but let's say that a lot of it was blog posts. And they know that they can find somebody to do these blog posts for, you know, a fraction of what you charge. Mm-hmm. So if you took the higher value projects, which you're probably going to want to do anyway,
yeah,
then, you know, they might be able to make it work. There were the other stuff with somebody else. You know, we have a party here every Christmas Eve. We will cook the stuff for the party that we know we want to get right. And then we cater the other things from the grocery store, from Whole Foods or wherever, right? Because that stuff, you know what? It's not worth it. I can't make it that cheaply or that quickly.
Yeah. I love that.
But I'll buy the cheese and the charcuterie, all that from Trader Joe's. I can get it for very cheap, a lot cheaper than I can if I had Whole Foods do it. So, yeah.
Excellent. This is great. Yeah, I feel way better about this. Okay. Thank you
Good.
For the clarity. Yeah. I'm going to ask her about that. And if she doesn't go for it, that's no big deal because you're right. I cannot close that gap. It's too wide. And
yeah.
But maybe I can do that. Yeah. Take on it.
If this were a contest where it's like, hey, whoever closes the biggest deal gets, you know, a 1 week vacation in Mexico, then yeah, but this is, you know, you got to not got to do the work. So if you get it, there's a price to pay at that point, and you got to make sure that it's the right price.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah.
Keep us posted.
Thank you, Ed.
All right, you're welcome. Good stuff. All right. Let's see. Jacob has a question here. It says, "I've hit a lull. At the end of 2018, I had a lot of momentum and was making more money than ever before, but this year has started out slow. I had a few clients pull back, and my income has dropped significantly. Besides worrying about prospecting, what else can I be doing during this time to help bring in more work and to build my business back up?" Yeah. All right. So, Jacob, let me bring you in. Sorry for the wait. How are you?
I'm good, Ed. How are you doing?
Good. Well, how are you other than the lull, you know?
Yeah, well, that's never fun, but...
Yeah. So I think great question. It's like, look, I got to make something happen quickly. There's a few things that I would do. The one is you're doing it, warm mule prospecting. The other is LinkedIn. Are you doing anything right now with LinkedIn?
No, I've never really been big on LinkedIn. I mean, I have a profile and every once in a while people ask to connect and stuff like that, but no, I've never really done anything with LinkedIn.
Okay. We got a couple of trainings in the training portal.
Mm-hmm.
And I got two that I can recommend. One is, and I think they're both under market develop a plan.
Okay.
One is LinkedIn for freelance professionals, and the other one is the LinkedIn Conversation Starter, which is actually under Snackables.
Okay.
And that's another great one because LinkedIn, meaning because it's all under your control in terms of the effort you put forth. You know, like warm mule prospecting, you can knock on more doors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with LinkedIn. Make more connections and start more conversations.
Okay.
The other thing I would do is reactivate dormant clients. And this is one that a lot of people don't think about, but look, let's face it, not every client you've worked with in the past is someone you're going to want to work with again.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like the, you know, the really bad ones. So this is like bad, okay, and great. You know, the strategy is all about just saying, well, okay, look, let's just, obviously I'm not going to touch these, but focusing on these two categories and just reconnecting with them.
Right. Yeah. So for most of my clients in the past, clients I'm trying to move on from.
Okay.
They were, you know, like the entry level, just blog post kind of clients, and they were good to start off with, but you know, I'm trying to grow past that. So I did
the
look
most
into
ball
that
in
a
this.
Little bit. Right.
Okay. Do you have any that you've done some work for or currently are, but it's kind of, you know, on and off, that are either okay or great?
Yeah, I have a few. One of the things that happened was a couple of my clients, and the reason why I'm kind of in the lull right now is a few of them, like I said, wanted to kind of pull back. They wanted to start the year, kind of figure out what they were going to do. They had kind of just this big pool of content that we'd already created together that they were kind of trying to figure out what to do with it. And so I enjoyed working with them, but they were kind of in this awkward spot. And so we took a break for a little bit. And that's kind of where I'm at now.
Okay.
Them.
Well, that actually brings me to my fourth one, which is bring ideas to the table.
Okay.
And this is a combination that you can use it in conjunction with number three. So this is about, let's use that example. And listen, I know I'm not getting the specifics exactly, but let's just say somebody you did a lot of content for last year, and now they're kind of like on hold trying to figure out what they're going to do next
mm-hmm.
when it comes to your stuff, is bringing ideas in terms of how you guys can work together to repurpose some of that content, turning a couple of the white papers into a webinar, turning a few of the more successful blog posts into a white paper, stitching together a series of blog posts into an ebook, getting
okay.
really
That's
creative
good, yeah.
with how can we take the assets we already have and just squeeze more value out of them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this requires you to be a little more strategic and creative instead of an order taker. I'm not saying that's how you position yourself, but instead of like, you know, hey, you got anything for me? This is like, hey, you know, I had this idea that I wanted to talk to you about, and you're being the proactive one here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good idea.
I got some really specific stuff for this one, for reactivating. So, and that's in, have you seen my email prospecting playbook?
I feel like I've read that one before, but I know I went through the warm email prospecting, that whole modules, but
okay.
it's separate than that from that.
Yeah, it's under, this is under market. Develop a plan.
Okay.
So look that up, and then you'll see I got a whole section for reactivating. And then again, you can use these two with past dormant and current clients. So this is past dormant and current clients. I know none of these sound like, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. None of this is a, you know, some kind of revelation, but we're looking for a result quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, what these four things represent is very strategic spaghetti that we're going to be throwing at the wall.
Okay.
And we're looking to see which one of these is actually going to stick. You know, we're even going to boil some gluten-free stuff, you know, whole wheat, Italian imported, you know, like we're going to try it all and we're going
right.
to see. And let's just, you know, you just have to trust that from this effort, something will come out of it. There are other things I could tell you to do. The thing is that in many other cases, a lot of the things that work long term have a lower probability of yielding something in the short term.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm finding too, because one of the things, and we've talked about it before, I'm trying to move away from just blog posts to doing the bigger projects and kind of leveling up that way.
Yeah.
And so when I lost some of these blogging clients, I thought like, oh, this is a perfect opportunity to just kind of go for the bigger projects, which is what I started doing. But I'm finding that it takes a lot longer to land these bigger like white paper projects than it does to land a blog post. And I mean, I don't know if that happens for everybody, but that's what's happening for me. And it's like, you know, we'll go a couple weeks and I'll follow up with them and they're like, oh, we need a couple more weeks and they're still interested, but it's taking forever. And that's one of the reasons the lull has kind of lasted this long, I guess. But
yeah, which means that because of that, and that is very common, because of that, you are probably going to need to step up the activity because of the long sales cycle.
Now, right. That so you mean like contacting more people?
Yeah, your prospecting and marketing activity, because mm-hmm. you're used to converting so many, right, a certain percentage. But right. Now that you got a longer sales cycle, it doesn't mean that your conversion rate is any lower. It's just that you have a longer sales cycle.
Right.
Which means that you have to step it up. Now, what could end up happening in the end when it all catches up is that you got several people saying yes within a span of 2 or 3 weeks. And now you're overbooked. But I'd rather you deal with that problem than with the problem you have right now.
Right. That problem would be welcomed.
Be careful what you wish for. Yeah. Several people on this call who have been in that situation and they, you know, it's like, yeah. Oh, I hate my life. But I, you know, I think, yeah, keep doing, I think you're going to find some great stuff here with LinkedIn, because there's so many things you could do there that have a probability of quick results. And then okay. don't discount this one and this one together. Again, with past dormant current clients, take a look at the email prospecting playbook. That will give you some ideas and just crank it up. I mean, unfortunately, what you were in a situation right now, it's going to cause you to, you have to put in some serious effort.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, you can solve this problem. You know, this is a short-term problem.
Right. Okay. Great. Well, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. Keep us posted.
Yeah, I will. Thanks.
Okay, great questions, guys. Hey, real quick, while I'm sorting through these, I'm just curious, what's been most valuable so far, what we've talked about? If you wouldn't mind letting me know in the chat area, just type in a capital V, and let me know what's been either most or something really valuable from our conversation or something that I talked with somebody else on. Okay, let's see, sorting through. I know I thought I saw a question from Linda, but I may have skipped it by accident. Okay, yeah, Linda did have a question about cash flow management. What do you do with extra cash if you make more than you need to allocate? Extra cash if you make more than you need to allocate. So basically you got a surplus. So here's what you want to do, Linda. Linda's referring to the – so she went through the cash flow management training, and she also read the book Profit First. So she is instituting a cash flow management system in her business, which requires – think of it as a combination of the envelope system, where you allocating certain percentages of everything that comes in to different envelopes, as well as the pay yourself first idea of, you know, you pay your profit first, not – what's left over at the end, that's not profit, you pay the profit first. So that is a great place to be, Linda, and what you do is you still allocate the same percentages, nothing changes, and what you're doing is by when you do that, you're building a bit of a buffer into each of those accounts. So let me give you an example, and this is something you actually want to happen. Let's just say that you've chosen to pay yourself $4,000 every 2 weeks, right? So every time you do your allocations. So that's $8,000 a month. And, you know, next time you do an allocation, in the percentage based on – and the percentage of the amount that came in for that two-week period is greater than $4,000. Let's just say it's $5,500. Great. You go ahead and still keep doing what you're doing. You bring in $5,500, but then you're only drawing $4,000, which means you have a surplus of $1,500 there, which you're just going to add to that account. You keep it there. And the reason you keep it there, and this is the key, next month you may not have enough to pay yourself that $4,000. But because you have a $1,500 buffer, you're able to go ahead and pay it. Let's say you were short $300. Well, guess what? You're over by $1,500. So now you're over by only $1,200, but still, you got that buffer. So you do want those buffers in place in all the categories, specifically operating income, or rather operating expenses and owner's compensation. And, you know, same thing with taxes, actually. So I had a situation where recently, you know, I actually had been over saving in the tax account. And of course, now that I reconciled for my annual taxes, I realized that I did. So, that's great. I was able to clear out my tax account. Normally I just leave it in there, but because I knew where I stood, I was able to clear it and then just maybe basically move that into, a little bit. I beefed up my operating, expenses account, my operating account, and I beefed up, additional savings. So, and I took 10%, for me. Just as a little reward. So yeah, you want those buffers, and when you're over or you allocate more than you need to, that's a good thing. Stick to the percentages. It's okay to move those percentages every month, up or down, depending. And what I like to have is, that's why you want to have a target allocating percentage for each one, as well as a current. And you're working toward the target percentage in each category. And every month you just keep edging it up or edging it down accordingly. Lisa had a question here about positioning. Would it be insane to use my age as an asset versus trying to hide it and positioning myself as an expert in healthcare communication? Let's talk about that. Yeah, good question. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
Hello.
Hello. So
this sort of came up in the past few days when I was looking at a number of health IT companies that look really exciting to me, but you know, on their page of about us, I swear that nobody is over 40 in their on their team. And so I thought, well, you know, I mean, definitely if I were to walk into their company for a permanent position, I wouldn't be laughed out, but I suspect I wouldn't be part of their culture. On the other hand, as a freelance expert, is there some advantage to actually claiming my age, claiming the wisdom of age, and making that part of my platform? Or am I shooting myself in the foot? You know, are there too many people that really are not ready for that? And or the other question is to go after only companies that really are embracing the issues of aging and healthcare.
Yeah, it's a great question, Lisa, and I don't have a straight answer for you, because it's one of those things that it really depends on who's reading it and what their perceptions are and what their mindset is and their preconceived notions, right? So you could be dealing with somebody who's – or you could be – somebody could be reading it who automatically will say, well, you know, she's not going to get it.
Yeah.
And you could have someone who's in the opposite end who, which is what I choose to believe, because I've seen this over and over again. I've talked to many people who hire. In fact, I'd love to hear from Liz Sheffield, because I know she's, came from the world of HR and is in that world all the time. I've talked to several HR people who have told me, here's the thing, and the unfortunate part of this with aging boomers is that a lot of companies value what they bring to the table. They just don't want to keep them as full-time employees. they want to encourage them to retire and to retire early.
Well, that I know. I mean, I've seen it too much.
Right. But so. But if it was as a consultant, totally different story. It's actually flipped. They really value their expertise. Of course, everything else being equal, the right person, the right fit, their expertise, their insights, and their wisdom, more than they would a 25-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But as a consultant, that is what I keep seeing and hearing. Now, should you flat out, let's go back to your question, and just say, hey, age is an asset in my case. My reaction to that, Lisa, is I think you're better off implying it as opposed to overtly saying, you know, hire me because I'm, you know, this age. Not that you'd do it that way.
Well, and yeah, I mean, it is what I do now. I mean, in all fairness, my photo is older, so, you know, I should update that. But if no one meets me, then that's okay. But yeah, I was just sort of looking at these various people who are in the aging world because I've been looking for mentors, you know. I mean, they're really, you know, it's a question of genetics too. I have, my father spends several hours a day writing books at his computer and he's 92. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, he loves it. He's on his maybe 25th novel or something, you know, none of them being great sellers, but he's having fun. But, you know, so there is that question, but there, you know, there's a lot going on in the field of aging where people are looking at, you know, what can people do? And yet I looked at one thing the other day that was retirementjobs.com or something. And all the jobs are for security people in skyscrapers, or, you know, the lobby greeters, and I went, oh, this is really pathetic. So it's just hard to know, you know, whether or not to become an expert in the aging field, you know, aging health. I mean, most chronic and advanced illness is for those over 50. So it, you know, it is an aging area, and there's more empathy I think one can bring to that when you're older, but yeah, I was just sort of curious whether, I think probably what I'm doing is the right direction. I was just curious what others felt about embracing.
Well, here's what I can tell you, Lisa. You cannot go wrong by taking a stand as long as the stand you take has a market that will support it.
Exactly. Well, and that's what I'm not sure of.
So let's face it right
because
in.
A lot of the companies I'd love to work for are really, as I say, these teams of under 40s, and they're all doing IT for health management. And I look at them and think, you guys don't even believe you're ever going to get old or die. I mean, you're just too young. you're too young to know what it really means. And they're selling IT, so maybe it doesn't matter. But it's interesting.
Well, if you take a stand, what you're basically doing is you're not saying no to healthcare. Yeah, you're being very clear about whom you can best serve, right? And what you're doing is you're not limiting your market, but you're going to become more attractive in this segment of the market than in this segment of the market. Now, some people here might still say, Lisa, I think you'd be great for us. But for the most part, what you're doing is you're being very clear. Look, in my case, I'm very clear. I only work with writers and copywriters.
Right.
I had somebody, every month I have designers, translators, all kinds of people approach me saying, you know, I really want to work with you, but here's what I do. And I, it used to hurt me to say no, but now it's, you know, I find it easy. By focusing strictly on this subsegment of the market, I'm able to do a better job converting those who are in that subsegment because I become more the obvious choice.
So it becomes, it's the next step from specializing in the broad area of healthcare into aging.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean that, again, somebody out here is going to say, no, actually, I hear you, but I think you'd be great for us. But you're not trying to be all things to all people. You know, you're not trying to be, You're just saying, look, this is my domain. Or this is, you know, yeah, this is the broader area, but I have a strong specialty here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and the question is there enough content marketing in that area? I'm not sure there is yet. So that's the next thing I have to investigate.
I would. Yes, absolutely. And you might decide, you know what, I'm going to take kind of a hybrid approach. I'm going to say healthcare, but I'm going to say one of my areas of deep concentration, one of my areas of domain expertise is, you know, aging, anything around this topic of aging. So it doesn't have to be for consumer audiences. I mean, there's a lot of B2B stuff regarding aging because of the aging boomer population, which is massive. Oh, yeah. No, so like 3 million people.
I mean, yeah. that's my thinking, is it is huge, and it's just sort of, it's sort of a new thought I had in terms of embracing that. But
yeah, but you don't have to say, hey.
And I don't have to say because I'm old.
Because I'm old, exactly. Yeah, it's like, you know, if you only work with women and that's your target market, women leaders like Susan Baracco, my colleague, she doesn't have to say, and by the way, I'm a woman too. Like, her headshot is there on her homepage and the about page, et cetera. So, you know.
Yeah, in my case, I try and hide the fact that, oh, and I'm old too. So
you're not old, but yeah, okay.
Well, getting there, but I do have, I think my photo is about 10 years old, and I don't look that different, but I also feel like maybe I should be more honest there, but we'll see.
Does this help?
It is. It's very helpful. Thank you.
Good deal. All right, Lisa. Okay. So let's see, you got some good stuff here. Valuable. Linda says, the idea of not going after a retainer with a new client. Yeah. Liz said, she liked the discussion to move ahead with a survey and talk to my audience. Good stuff. Erica, you talk with Jacob about what to do when you need work, and you talk with Hannah about her retainer. Joe said the most recent conversation for when you need work right away. Yeah. Anna says, how to deal with lulls, trying to be more consistent with prospecting, but I'm still scared. Yeah. Kelly, deferring retainer talk until flagship at least one assignment with a client, finishing at least one assignment with a client. Lee says, everything so far, ditto on the retainer info, wait until you've done a pilot project. Hannah, having a solution to this complex retainer conundrum feels good. How to drum up more work when I hit a lull, says Jacob. And Lisa says, suggesting the client find a lower cost writer for lower value projects. Yeah. Good stuff. Exactly. Yeah, man. Look, I'm going to do this. I'm the carpenter, and I'm going to create this custom dining room table. You can buy the chairs at IKEA, you know, cause there's not enough margin for me to do the chairs. Who was I talking to about it the other day? Anyway, yeah, good stuff. All right, so we got an open floor right now for questions or anything you want to discuss. Again, just put a capital Q in the chat area in front of it so I know that it's a question, something you want to discuss. You don't have to give me the whole thing there in the chat. I'll unmute you and we can have a conversation. You know, one thing that Anna had mentioned, this whole idea, let me go back to it so I don't misquote her. How to deal with lulls, trying to be more consistent with the prospect, but I'm still scared. Yeah. So remember, Anna, it's when you are right now, like you landed all this work, the tendency, and nobody could blame you for this because this is what we all do, is to just halt your prospecting, which I think is good, but there's a different version of that. I don't think it's a binary decision. It's not a yes or no. It's, okay, maybe I scale back the time I dedicate to my marketing, but then you change what you do. So rather than knocking on doors saying, hey, can I help you? You're instead staying in touch with prospects who were not ready to hire you at the time. And you want to keep a list of those people to then nurture them and send them value-added information. That way, two things happen. First of all, you don't lose the habit of carving out a certain percentage of your week, every week, to work on marketing. Second, you shouldn't be surprised if some of those actually respond with, hey, yeah, thanks for this. This was great. Love the article. You know, we should probably be talking because we're planning on doing these things next month and, you know, we could use your help. And if you do engage in that conversation, then you can talk about the backlog, which is a much easier way to address it than if I told you that I could help you, but then you told me yes, and then I said, well, actually, I can't right now. That's awkward. And by the way, so let's see, I have questions about a crazy niche idea, says Linda. So Linda, can I unmute you? Let me try it. And hey, Linda, you're
Hi,
on.
Hi, how are you? Hi, can
good.
You hear me?
I can hear you. Wasn't sure if you're somewhere where you could talk, so.
Yeah, as long as I'm not, you know, yelling into my mic, it should be okay.
Okay. No, you sound good.
Yeah, so I actually posted it right below, but a couple of years ago, I had the idea to market to cleaning businesses, cleaning equipment companies, anything to do with home, facilities maintenance, hospitality design, home design. And at the time, I did a snail mailing to about 50 cleaning companies and only got one person interested and no actual revenue from this. And I'm wondering if it's too niche or if I didn't give enough of a chance or if it's too weird.
Well, it depends. Are we talking about B2B or B2C?
This would be – that's a good question,
or
actually.
Combination, right? Because yeah, cleaning equipment obviously is B2B. Well, depends, I guess.
It depends, yeah. So it would be both, and I have experience in both. And I have experience writing on all of these topics, and I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a way to think about it and see if this helps.
Okay.
You actually want to look at four different dimensions and just to make the better decision, because I know where you're coming from. It's like, hey, I got experience here. Should I market this? Should I go after these clients? And the first one is that one, experience. You know, do you have experience in that particular market? And, you know, what you're telling me is yes, right?
Yeah.
So let's just give it a check plus.
Including the Idiot's Guide. I wrote the Idiot's Guide to Cleaning.
Ah, well, look at you.
So you know what I mean?
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah, so I think that would kind of position me as an expert, at least in cleaning, but not necessarily these more niche topics, maybe the B2B stuff.
So, yeah, so not only do you have experience here, but you also have track record, right, and credibility and so forth. So there's that one. The next one is network. You know, do you know people who know others, you know, that there could be potential clients for you? You know, so just when I ask you that, what's your instant reaction? Is it, you know, is it like a check minus, meaning not really, or maybe some, or I know a lot of people?
Yeah, I would say a check minus.
Okay. Okay. And again, this is one out of four dimensions, so no big deal. Now, here's a big one. The demand for content and copy. So let me give you two examples. Software company, as you know, tech, I mean, they have to write about this stuff because it's innovative, it's constantly evolving, it doesn't sell itself. A lot of content marketing, a lot of copy, as opposed to a company that sells resins for pipe and for plastic products. Right? On the other end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So one, you need a lot of writing in terms of content and copy. The other one, it's all about price. It's a commodity and about maybe relationships. So where do you think overall, when you think about this industry, in terms of overall need and demand for not just writing, but at the fees that you want to get?
Right. Yeah. And I think what I'm talking about is so broad that I could kind of home in on those areas where there is a lot more demand, so not the commodities, but the things where they do need a lot of content. And I think I do make the mistake of just assuming that everybody needs lots of content all the time. But yes, the thing about the commodities, yes.
Keep in mind that with demand, I'm not talking about your perceived demand, it's their perceived demand. Their
right.
Perceived need, I should say. Like they need to get it already. You can't be teaching. So maybe there's a blend, but what I'm hearing is just maybe it averages out to check. And
right.
Then the last one is topics and people. And what I mean by that is, how do you feel about the topics that you'd be writing about? And then the people, if you have experience working with these people, like, how do you like them? And I only ask because sometimes you work with, man, I just don't want to work with those people. I got a strong experience. I got a great network, but I either hate that topic or I hate the people.
Right. Yeah. No, I actually really enjoy all of it.
Okay. So, I mean, you're looking good. The only area that's maybe not great is this one.
Yeah.
Right. But everything else just really checks out. Right. You know, you like this, you have this, and you have this. The most important two quadrants are these two. Because if you don't have the experience or background or track record, and if they don't get it, and you're going to have to sell the idea, that's just an uphill battle. So I look at all of them, but I specifically look at these two, and they kind of check out. So to answer your question, long answer to a simple question, is it looks like it could be viable.
Okay. So then the question with that is, so I've been doing this, as we discussed in the chat, I've been doing this for 22 years. I have a lot of different niches. Does it make sense to, for example, my website and LinkedIn go all in on this sort of thing or just kind of highlight it as one of my many things that I write about?
Yeah. All right. So are you familiar with investing stock portfolio allocations?
No.
You know? So the
way.
You
can tell from my questions, I'm terrible at finances.
No, it's okay. It's okay. The way that financial advisors explain this is, look, they say don't put all your money, let me give you the opposite scenario. Don't put all your money in Enron stock.
Right.
Right? So this is Enron. You remember Enron?
Yeah.
Okay. Just in case. What you do is you have several categories, right, of investments. You know, you have – this one might be like small companies that are high growth but a high risk as well, all the way to, you know, big stable companies like Dow Chemical and IBM and, you know, the Dow 30.
Right.
Or bonds. You know, there's bonds and other products like that. What you want is you want to allocate a certain percentage of your stock portfolio to different categories, because think about it like a window pane. If one of these breaks, right, if this window pane right here breaks, you didn't lose the whole window. You just got to replace that pane.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is if you go ahead and go all in, the risk right now, because you don't know how viable it would be, is that you're putting all your money in Enron stock, which could be go really high or it could fail, as opposed to just saying, look, I'm going to go after, let's say, and forget about all these categories, I'm going to go after three categories. And one of them is going to be the one you just told me about. Then I'm going to go after this one. And then I'm going to go after this other one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to see. You know, and on my website, you could do all three. Now, it helps if they feel somehow related or like they could work together. You remember Sesame Street? They used to have this game, right? It's like, all right, which one doesn't belong? There's like, you know, a person, you know, a dog, and, you know, a star and a cat. So that's my cat right there.
Nice.
Right. You don't want this one because that's just going to feel odd. So you don't want to say I work for tech companies and massage therapists if you can help it.
Yeah. And I think that's where part of my problem is I do everything. I have, you know, done multiple things in everything from healthcare to tech to, you know, softer things. So it's hard to choose. And I know you're supposed to focus in on at least a few niches, not have 20 of them. So
exactly.
But
well,
yeah.
What have you, and I know this is, you know, you're still thinking through this, but have you thought about maybe a short list first? You know, have you been able to kind of consolidate it? That's the first step.
No. That's probably something I should do.
Yeah. I recommend thinking, and it doesn't mean you have to say no to your others, Linda. One of the things about creative people, like us, we writers are interested in so many things that the temptation
exactly.
is just to say, I do all of these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I can write for all these. But here's the thing. It doesn't mean that if you drive a stake in the ground and you say, you know, I'm going to focus on these three or in one. It doesn't mean that you can't get, you know, some of these. What will happen is automatically some of these will come in as referrals. Or they'll just contact you and say, I know that you don't focus in our industry, but I've been reading your stuff and I love your style and I love your experience. And I'm wondering if you'd consider looking at what we have. And then you can be open to that, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure this will all come up in one of the later lessons too. I'm still working through the more cash flow and productivity ones. So I guess when I get to that point, I can think about this a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. The positioning stuff will walk you through an exercise that's painful. We'll help you do this and just narrow it down. And then let's talk about it. But yeah, I wouldn't worry about it too much, but I wanted to give you this to start thinking about, okay?
That's great. Yeah, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Oh, and by the way, welcome. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. I'm enjoying it.
All right. Make sure I didn't miss anybody here. Some great conversations going on in the chat area, by the way. This is good stuff. All right, we got time for one more, and I think Anna's got one here. Let's see, I was going to ask a question about prospecting. Trying to do at least 30 minutes a day. I wonder if that's enough. Okay. Anna, let me bring you in. Hello, Anna.
Hey, Ed. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. So I've had this like huge windfall and I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. So I keep multiplying the number that I've made so far by four to figure out what I could possibly make in this year, like, which is dumb because it's just 1 month, but like, it's more of like, what's the psychology of it? Of like, what happens if next month I go back to 5,000, you know, after almost 20, like, I just don't want to feel like a failure. You know what I mean?
Well, you're not going to be a failure no matter what. So why do you think you would be a failure? Let's say you went back down to 5 next month. What about that would make you feel like a failure?
I guess I've been working so hard for the last year to try to get to 10,000. Like, that was my number. And then all of a sudden this whale client jumped into my life and like doubled it. And I just feel like if I can't make that happen again or replicate it, which I don't know how because he found me, you know, I feel like that was not something within my control. Mm-hmm. Like, so to replicate it, like I can't do it except to keep asking him for more money.
Listen, you started, yeah, tell him you started a bad habit here. You created a monster. Now I need more money from you.
Please pay me $10,000 every month. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a couple of thoughts. Look, there's not a formula for this, but I want to give you some things that I think might help you. And you tell me, and Ruthie's saying, hey, I understand you completely. So you're not alone, okay? So don't feel bad. I think the first thing is I want you to focus on the positives. It's very, very easy to go through that for initial high and then right away start to fear. That's, you know, that is your lizard brain trying to help you survive, right? That is fear. And you can't let that guide your thinking or your decisions. It's still going to come up, but I want you to just look at it for what it is and not let it consume you. Okay. So, you know, that's kind of the whole concept or a big part of mindfulness. Is the just noticing these thoughts and just looking at them for what they are instead of letting them getting, you know, wrestling them. You don't want to wrestle them. Just fine. Keep doing what you're doing and let that fear sit there on your reading chair while you're doing your work. And then eventually it's going to lose interest and then just go away because you're not paying attention to it. It'll come back, but that's fine. This takes practice.
Right.
The second thing is, you are now psychologically in a much better place. Because you have the confidence. So one of the great times to continue your prospecting efforts and your marketing efforts, like I've mentioned a few minutes ago, is now while you have the work because you have the confidence.
Right.
I mean, how would you say this confidence level that you're in right now compares to when you're struggling to make, you know, 3,000 for that month?
Right. February, I had a really bad month. Like I had 2 weeks with crickets. And I was like, that's it. This is done. And that's actually when I hired you, when I decided to do the coaching, like, because I was like, I need to do something. Like, I can't just sit here like this. So, yeah.
So, yeah, like, you should count your blessings and say, thank God that, you know, this came in. Now I have some runway, okay? But you also have the confidence. So I want you to pay attention to that and honor that, the fact that, you know, they always say, I always learn in corporate sales, look, the best time to follow up with prospects and make cold calls or do your prospecting is the moment you land a big sale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when most the amateurs would quit for the day. And they would go out, you know, to party. And the pros take about 5 minutes to celebrate, and then they get on the phone. And then because their confidence is higher and prospects and clients can sense it, you know, they don't need it anymore. Mm-hmm. And because they don't need it, they come across differently. They show up differently. So I want you to squeeze every ounce of value out of this opportunity that you have right now, the situation, which is the fact that you're at a great place. Don't wait until, you know, you're down. It's to start, you know, the prospecting engine again. So that's the second thing. The third thing is something that's not, I know it's not on your game plan that you probably heard a couple of people are working on, is cash flow management. Because as you know, and can you still see my iPad?
Yeah.
All right. So you got, you know, January, then February, and then March, April, let's just say. And then maybe March is better, but then April sucks. And then May is like, you know, record month. And then whatever. The problem is that, so that's the variable income, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, as you know, that real life is such that this is your, what you need from your business to live.
Sure.
Right? So this is the money. So right now you got a surplus, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. So you got this surplus. Next month, let's just say, you know, you have a shortfall, then you have a little surplus, then a big shortfall, but then a big surplus. This is nerve wracking, because you have a certain need. So the first thing is, and we may want to go ahead and get into this, maybe pause your current game plan and get into cash flow management, set up a system where you can actually live off this amount. And when you have highs, great, you're building up a surplus. And then when you have lows, you're drawing from that surplus. And you're able to maintain the standard of living. And in fact, every few months, if we continue down the line, you're able to raise it, and then raise it, and then raise it. But you're not raising it based on this curve, you're raising it much more strategically.
Right. My husband's been telling me to do this for several months.
Okay.
So pay myself don't a tell, salary.
Don't tell him I said this, because Anisha's going to say I told you so, right? So if you go to Optimize Operations under Grow, you'll see the cash flow management class there.
Mm-hmm.
I think now is the time to start going through that, because believe me, when I implemented this, I mean, I have the same thing in my coaching business, you know, and to this day, it's just, you know, some months are huge and then some months are really low. But, you know, I have overhead, I have expenses, I have a salary that I pay myself. And so how do you make all this work? It's taking so much of the stress out of monthly numbers. I can't even tell you.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's the third solution.
Yeah, I think that's because I was pretty stressed out in February because I have to cover daycare, and daycare is very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
So I was they're not staying at home with me.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. Perfect. I just recently gave myself just a slight raise because of this, and I was able to do it. But it also works backward. In that, you'll see the way the system works, it forces discipline not only in your business, but also in your personal finances. Mm-hmm. Because you have these constraints. I'm a big believer that constraints are a very helpful thing.
Right.
So yeah, I would go ahead and go through that as soon as possible, and I think it's going to help.
All right, I will do. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. All right, so I know a few had to leave. Hey, good stuff. Man, we had a broad range of conversations. I love it, and I appreciate you playing along. I want to wrap up here, and I'd love to know two things. For those of you who are left, if you wouldn't mind, in the chat area, typing in a capital T and giving me a big takeaway from today's conversation. It doesn't have to be your top one, but takeaway that was really helpful. And then also typing in a capital A and letting me know what your top action item is for the next 2 weeks. Okay, I want to make sure you walk away from this with something tangible. The reason these are called momentum calls is I want to make sure you get and maintain and sustain momentum, and you get momentum by taking action, consistent action, and the right action. So let me know, type in a capital T for takeaway, capital A for action item, and then we'll wrap up. Ruthie says, I'm not quitting. I'm busy. Yeah. I know you're not. I know you're not going to quit. No, you got great momentum. Kelly says, take away. When I'm really busy, nurturing may be a better idea than warm mule prospecting. Yeah, perfect. Anna, my husband is right about the cash flow, but we're not going to tell him, right? And my action is to actually do it. Good. And Joe says, take away, hold off on retainers until after the first assignment. And action item, look at my LinkedIn network for potential prospects. Great. Great stuff, Joe. Hey, and great to have you on board, my friend. Hannah says, clarity on that retainer situation is a takeaway. Ruthie says, takeaway, why you shouldn't do retainers with new clients. Hannah says, top action item, get my next game plan. I think it's time. Okay, cool. And Ruthie, action item, start the marketing plan. There you go. All right, I think I got everybody. Yeah, I think so. Cool. All right, guys. Hey, great session today. Thank you for playing along. Great conversations. I hope this was really helpful. And hey, we'll continue the conversations in the Facebook group. So I'll see you guys there. Have a great rest of the week. Talk soon.